Welcome to Bruderhof Radio. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman.
It's amazing. You can feel the difference when you go into a village that's part of Las Abejas. It's not something you can describe, but you can just feel the difference. You know, they take care of each other. They look out for each other.
This week on Bruderhof Radio, a revolution within a revolution. Human rights activists recently returned from Chiapas, Mexico, describe a community of nonviolent indigenous people fighting the same injustice as the more widely known Zapatista army, but using different methods. Say the word Chiapas and see what response you get. A blank stare? Perhaps, but to most Americans, the name of this state in Mexico's southern highlands evokes a flood of images and references to the world's first postmodern revolution. Since January 1994, when the members of the Zapatista Army for National Liberation, or EZLN, fought for 12 days against the Mexican government, the world press has periodically turned its fickle attention to Chiapas. More often than not, the story they have given us is the story of war. The Mexican government against the gun-toting, ski-masked guerrillas backed by the mysterious Subcomandante Marcos. But in many ways, this is a one-sided struggle. The indigenous peoples of Chiapas, of which the EZLN is merely the most visible segment, suffer what has been termed a low-intensity war of harassment and violence from the Mexican military, state police, and loosely organized paramilitary groups. For an update of this situation, we spoke with members of a delegation that spent 10 days in Chiapas this September. Pete Mattis is a New York delegate.
On the 1st of January in 1994 was a Zapatista uprising. They were protesting the signing of NAFTA, which they considered the death certificate for the indigenous people. For 12 days they fought against the Mexican government, and significant world opinion and also public opinion in Mexico sided with the Zapatistas, which basically forced the Mexican government into initiating peace talks, which took place later that year in San Andres in Chiapas, where the government met with the Zapatistas and signed the San Andres Peace Accords. The government took the peace accords home, and within weeks they publicly announced that they could not possibly agree to the stuff that they'd signed to, which is why the Zapatistas won't talk with the government now. The government's always talking about wanting to reinitiate the peace talks, but the Zapatistas always say, "We will continue talking when you complete what you already signed to."
According to Mattis, the Zapatista uprising in 1994 was a direct response to increased U.S. corporate involvement in Mexico that was precipitated by the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. Tom Hansen, who, as national coordinator of the Chicago-based Mexico Solidarity Network, has made over 30 trips to Chiapas, explains why the people of Chiapas felt particularly threatened by NAFTA.
Well, I kind of view NAFTA as the poster boy for this whole process that we've come to know as globalization. What's generally known in Latin America as neoliberalism. It's what I like to call the biggest ripoff in the history of humankind. It's a kind of a process where it's easier to move goods and money across borders than it is to move people across borders. In fact, goods and money enjoy more legal protections than human beings do right now. It's a situation where the third world is viewed as the source of cheap labor and cheap natural resources for the benefit of the first world. And the result of this whole process of globalization, which is exemplified by NAFTA, has been the statistics speak very eloquently. The poorest 70% of the population in Mexico has lost 29% of their purchasing power since the passage of NAFTA in 1994. Now, if that happened in the United States, we'd probably call it a recession. In Mexico, it's called progress. What we're seeing is the improvisation, the increase in poverty of the poorest people in Mexico, and in particular the 28 million indigenous people in Mexico. The poverty indices in Chiapas are the worst in Mexico, everything from infant mortality rate to average life expectancy to educational and health levels. They're the lowest in all of Mexico, and yet it's the richest state in Mexico in natural resources. And a couple of people in the state and a couple of multinational corporations have gotten very rich off of it. The state produces 60% of the hydroelectric power that's consumed in Mexico and Central America. It's the number one state in production of coffee and bananas for export, the number three state in the production of beef. Largest uranium mine in Mexico is in Chiapas. Some of the largest untapped oil and natural gas reserves in Mexico are in Chiapas, and some of the most important precious hardwood reserves are in Chiapas. So a couple of people have gotten very rich off of exploitation of these natural resources, but it hasn't benefited the majority of the people.
To maintain such economic disparity, it is not surprising that the large landowners and agricultural corporations who profit from the exploitation of Chiapas' natural wealth see a need to suppress forms of dissent. Paramilitary groups supported by these landowners often carry out such harassment. But the Mexican military is also involved in Chiapas. Tom Hansen.
Well, of course, there's the whole process of militarization. There's about 60,000 troops stationed in Chiapas right now, which is about a third of the Mexican army. And it's hard to find an indigenous community that's sympathetic to the Zapatistas that doesn't have an army base or an army outpost either in the community or on the very edge of the community. And the result of this is that the army spreads terror and fear amongst the population. If you're taking, for example, chickens or eggs into town to sell, it's as likely that the army will stop you as not, and that your eggs and chickens will be confiscated. People are afraid to go out alone into their fields to work their crops because of the army presence, because of arbitrary arrests, and because of widespread rapes. The result is widespread food shortages, malnutrition. Even by official government statistics, about 70% of the indigenous population in Chiapas is malnourished. And a lot of this has to do with the military presence, which disrupts the normal flow of life. What the military can't do during the day, the paramilitaries and the death squads who are armed and trained by the military and work under the direction of the ruling party, the PRI, they do at night. And in most of the indigenous communities in Chiapas, there are Indians that have historically aligned themselves with the free, that control the politics and the economy of the community, and they get to distribute whatever small crumbs fall off the table from the free. They're a little bit better off than other people in the community. It's also the case that some of the large landowners in Chiapas have hired indigenous peoples as kind of what they used to call guardias blancas, or death squads. These have since been converted into the paramilitary groups. Reportedly, whether it was the landowners paying them or right now the military and the free, these people are very well paid. By Chiapan standards, they're making $300, $400, or $500 a month, which is a lot of money down there. Plus, they get to walk around with a rifle and kind of swagger around and rule the town. Certainly the majority of people in Chiapas aren't involved in the paramilitaries, but you can understand why it might appeal to a small percentage of delinquents.
The paramilitary groups are basically the private armies of the landowners in Chiapas and in other parts of Mexico. The government denies that they exist, but the Human Rights Center, which is connected with the diocese in San Cristobal, has identified 12 different groups, and the government in the past has sold arms directly to the paramilitaries. They are people from the villages, from the same indigenous peoples of Chiapas, who are hired to bring terror, to terrorize the areas, to destabilize the communities.
The massacre that took place in the village of Acteal on December 22, 1997, is by far the bloodiest example of paramilitary activity in Chiapas. 45 people, mostly women and children, were slaughtered in a few hours. Mattis explains.
On December 22nd in 97, a group of paramilitaries came down on a gathering in Acteal, where the villagers at Acteal were fasting and praying for 3 days. They attacked them, chased the people out of the church and down into a gully right next to the church, where they surrounded them and shot and killed 45 people at close range.
The first afternoon we were in Acteal, one of the organizers of Las Abejas took us down to the ravine where the actual massacre happened.
Serena Wood, another delegate, describes their visit to the scene of the 1997 killings.
We stood above the ravine where the soldiers had stood and shot all 47 of these people. And they'd been chased out of the church by the soldiers, and then they tried to escape into the ravine. And the reason so many women and children were killed was because they all wear these very bright blouses, and they couldn't hide in the woods. So a lot more of the men got away. But the soldiers just shot into this mass of people from like 20 feet away. And it was crazy when you stand there. You feel like you're standing on the end of the world. And there's this beautiful jungle. And these people tell you how the whole ravine was just a river of blood. And you, ugh. So this man told us this story. And, you know, he stood there just crying. We were all crying. And he said how right then and there they knew the only way they were going to be able to go on was by forgiving and by praying for these people. And we just, you know, what can you say? And then we went a little further down the ravine, and there's this one house on the edge of the ravine. And the family who lives in there, the mother and the two daughters were massacred, and the little boy was very badly wounded. He has big scars on his thighs, and his almost all of his right hand is blown away. All that's left is his baby finger, and he has scars all the way up his arm. So we met him and his father and his new mother. You know, and this man told us the same story, basically, that, you know, he lost his wife and his two daughters, and he lives right where this happened. Every morning he comes out of his house and he looks at the place where he lost his family. And there's no bitterness and no revenge in him. It's unbelievable. And his son, Geronimo, he's 5 now, I believe, he was flown into Georgetown Medical Center for surgery and stuff afterwards, rehab. And he still needs more rehab, so every week he goes into San Cristobal with his dad. And that was a 2-hour drive for us to get from San Cristobal to Acteal, and they just hitchhike that and walk it every week. And on the way, they have to pass a military post where the very soldiers who killed his wife and 2 daughters are posted, and they know, you know, that they did this to his son, and they mock them and jeer at them, and this man has no hatred. He just goes on. We met a lot of other survivors. There's a little girl who's, I think she's 7. She was blinded somehow in the massacre. And she, I think she also lost her parents. She lives with her grandmother. And then there were other children who weren't injured but were orphaned. Another little boy who followed us all around the whole time, Fernando. He lost his parents and the rest of his family, and his uncle was taking care of him, as well as all the other single women on the community. They take care of these orphans.
You're listening to Bruderhof Radio. We're broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and progressive action. If you have comments or suggestions for us, please call us toll-free at 1-800-778-8461. We're also on the web at www.freespeech.org. One explanation for the forgiveness exhibited by the villagers of Acteal is an organization known as Las Abejas, or the Bees. This group is made up of indigenous people who, on principle of their Christian faith, have agreed not to take up arms against their oppressors. Acteal is populated primarily by members of Las Abejas. Ruben Ayala accompanied the delegation on his second trip to Chiapas.
I remember the last time we were there, 3 days after we left Chiapas, we picked up the newspapers in the United States, and 45 of these people were killed by the paramilitary groups. and these people refused to fight back. Just to give you a little background on them, the beef started in 1992. It started when five guys were thrown in jail. They were accused wrongly. And then their community decided, no, this is wrong. We're going to get them out. And they came out and they wanted to call, they were originally called La Sociedad Civil. But they wanted to change the name because they didn't want to practice their Christian faith the way they have seen the PRI in their country practice, because they felt that they were not practicing their faith to the fullest. So they had an argument. It was a very interesting argument because they were trying to pick a symbol. And which symbol are we going to use? And somebody wanted ants, another wanted this animal, that animal. Anyway, it came to the bee. It came down to two animals. It came down between the bee and the ant. But the ant did not get selected because the ant brings unclean material into his community or, you know, where they live at. The bee was picked because the bee brings pollen, water, and clean things into the hive. And the result of their work is the honey.
While in Chiapas, Ayala spoke to Vicente, a member of Las Abejas who witnessed the Acteal massacre in 1997. He outlined the basic principles of Las Abejas, which include universal forgiveness and respect for all human life.
If I keep thinking that I want to kill other people, God will condemn us at the end of the world and of our lives. When God created the heavens and the earth and man, He never gave us the right to kill one another. What God tells us is to have a long life, like trees, to live 200 or 300 years. This is how He made us, and this is how God intended for us to live. If I start thinking about hurting someone, that means that I'm actually thinking about killing them. It's like when I chop down a tree. I take away that tree's life. And that's what we do to other human beings. We cannot think like that. We must never do that. This is what I think, and this is what all of us Las Abejas think. We all want to live. We all want to give life. And we all want peace. We want them to respect us, to respect our human rights, because we all are human beings. This is all we have to have, a respect for each other's human rights.
Because of this deep respect for human rights, Wood and Mattis say the difference between members of the Bees and other people in Chiapas is noticeable.
It's amazing. You can feel the difference when you go into a village that's part of Las Abejas. I don't know, it's not something you can describe, but you can just feel the difference. You know, they take care of each other, they look out for each other. They have certain rules that they live by, even if they're not written rules. For example, there's no alcoholism in those villages, whereas alcoholism is rampant in the other villages. Even for communion, they will not use alcohol. They use orange soda. And it's as real to them as if it were wine.
The two communities of Las Abejas that we visited, Acteal and Choyep, are both refugee camps. They get their food provided by Red Cross and by the European community. Food and water is provided. And they, when they can, they return to their lands, to their properties, in their villages where they were chased out of to farm their land. Last year, they could not get back to harvest their crops. The paramilitaries would not allow them in. And the paramilitaries harvested their crops and stole them. This year, things are better, and they have been able to get back and farm their lands. So they hope for some income. And the work that the Red Cross is doing is good. They're providing food for these people that otherwise would be starving. But really, these people don't need aid. They need peace so that they can go back to their villages and raise their own food. It's a big problem in Las Abejas and in all the refugee camps that the people cannot provide for themselves. Don Pedro was saying that it kills the people's souls just to receive charity. And that people do not want to sit around and receive charity. They want to be able to work their own land and provide their own food. The people in Acteal are continuing the struggle for their rights and for justice in spite of all the oppression that they've received. And they are continuing in a form of nonviolence, which is really never been seen before. They are inspired by the other nonviolent movements of Gandhi, of Martin Luther King, but they see their movement as something new, something different, and they have not given up hope.
Tom Hansen agrees with Mattis' assessment that the quiet revolution of Las Abejas and the anti-imperialist struggle of the Zapatistas combine to create a new form of revolution, unlike any other colonial revolt the world has seen.
Well, I think the Zapatista rebellion really represents kind of a new vision of social change. You know, despite the fact that they're armed, they haven't fired a shot since the first week in January 1994. And they really view the significant social change as coming from the empowerment of civil society. And the Zapatistas have taken the view that, unlike kind of the traditional left in both Latin America and the United States, where a couple of people line up a program and then line up people behind them, the Zapatistas say we need to establish democratic structures and then let the community decide what the program is going to be. And so they've established those democratic structures in the indigenous communities, and their call to the Mexico and the rest of the world is take control of your lives, establish those democratic structures in your communities, and then take control of how your communities are run.
But although Mattis and Hansen may be correct in noting the novelty of the struggle in Chiapas, in some ways it's the same old story of neoliberal corporate oppression that has played itself out in almost every country south of the Rio Grande. Ruben Ayala explains.
The political situation in Chiapas is a very simple one. In order for Mexico, and this I heard from the human rights organization there, to come out of the third world and enter its new phase and join the first world, they needed to make some agreements with the United States and Canada. And the sacrificial lamb was Chiapas. They had to prove that they were serious. And the reason Chiapas was given up was because of its minerals, of the untapped oil, and of the uraniums that are under the mountains. So actually, what the president, Zedillo, and the one before him did was they betrayed their own country, you know, because they're giving everybody else the right to come in and do what they want in that country, to mine, to rape the earth, take the wood away, whatever. And what bothers me about that whole situation is because here goes a land, the Chiapas Strait, that's very rich. And the poverty there is, I think, is equal to Haiti. And Haiti's our poorest nation on the side of the globe. So that's what actually happened. It's very simple. In order for them to enter the first world, to be on the status with the rest of the industrial nations, they sold out Chiapas. I already knew about what was going on with the Zapatista struggle. I was very aware of it, but I did not know how hard or exactly what all was going on, because a lot of people, they think that it's the Zapatistas against the Mexican government, which it is, but it is more than that. And that's what a lot of people have to understand. The whole struggle with the Zapatistas actually goes way back to the discovery of the New World when they first landed in this on this side of the globe. The Zapatista struggle is not a new struggle. It's an old struggle. It goes back 606 years.
In the end, Ayala says, another peace agreement like the broken San Andres Accords of 1994 will not solve the problems of Chiapas. Constructive change can only be achieved by concerted individual efforts for peace, and it is this that Las Abejas, the Bees, hope to achieve through their resistance.
Joel Padron, who's from Simo Joel, a priest, he does a lot of work. He's a good man. He made a very interesting statement. He said, peace is not a paper that you sign to have an agreement between two opposing parties. Peace is something that comes from within, that we live out. It is our walk. It is our journey. And he's right. How can we have peace in this world if we have all the discontent and we're angry and we want to fight? You know, that piece of paper don't mean nothing because policy changes and you can tear that up and start a whole new war. To end with, what I would like to say is that a lot of people here in the United States, Europe, and around the world who are in solidarity with the people of Chiapas have always said that they work for peace. One thing that was striking to me there is that if we're going to be the peace we're going to work for peace, we have to look at the words of Gandhi. He said, we must be the change that we want to see. And I see that in the Mbees. You know, I see that they are about peace because they live it. Even though they have suffered, even though they have been killed and they get harassed and they're starving them, they live in peace and they refuse to do anything, anything that will contradict their work. Because one brother told me down there, he said, all right, you about peace, Ruben? Do you argue? And I said, yeah, of course I argue with people. I get very aggressive and, you know, sometimes I kind of lose it in my argument. He said, and then you are hindering your work of peace. He said, if you're arguing with somebody, you're standing in the way.
That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio, a closer look at Las Abejas, the organization of the bees in Chiapas, Mexico. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman and Ben Wright. For more information about the bees, or to order tapes and transcripts of Bruderhof Radio, give us a call at 1-800-778-8461. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information, call us 1-800-778-8461.